97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Well, isn't this an appropriate song for some news of the day that I will save for Sue in Sue's News?
Love it.
But a Pink Floyd related story that may or may not be related to money. And we'll save that. We'll do that here in a couple of minutes. Along the lines of classic rock, I should also mention that Rick Wakeman from Yes, who's coming to play the Sheldon Fred, it's October 20th, I think.
Right.
He's going to join us tomorrow on the 5 o'clock hour here on 97.1 FM Talk. I'm very much looking forward to that. So I think I was almost scammed this morning on something that may have been relatively sophisticated, and I was dumb at the same time. Now, let me at least paint the picture, because ordinarily, I think I would have been very suspicious earlier, but over the weekend, this was on Saturday, I had to order a headphone cable for one of my pairs of fancy AudioQuest headphones. The bunny may or may not have eaten my headphone cord. I can neither confirm, and I'll tell you what, man, he almost got to the headphones proper, and thank God, because those are my good ones. But anyway, the cord, you know, just to replace the cord. So I ordered the cord, and I was... Sometimes I'm impatient. I know that shocks you,
yes,
you guys.
I'm stunned.
But I went ahead and I paid like the $8 for the 2-day shipping. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to wait 5 days or whatever. So that was on Saturday, and I was looking through all my email. I can't find an email that confirms the order. I know that I was charged for the cable, right? So this morning I get a text message, and the text message says this. If I can find it, because I got to go down in my text messages right now. It says, the USPS package has arrived at the warehouse. It doesn't say and. It just says the. It says the USPS package arrived at the warehouse and cannot be delivered due to incomplete address information.
That's a scam.
Okay, but listen. It says confirm your address in the link within 12 hours. And then it says this is how sophisticated it is. When I first got it, the link, the hyperlink, was not available.
Thank goodness.
But listen to what happened.
Sorry.
It says, please confirm your address and the link within 12 hours. Please reply to Y and then exit the SMS, open the SMS activation link again, or copy it to Safari and open it. The U.S. Postal team wishes you a wonderful day. All right. So then after I respond Y, the link is available. So then I press the link.
Oh,
just hang on here. I think I'm okay, but I don't know. And it asked for my, and I'm telling you, it looks so official and absolutely, you know, like it's from the USPS. So I do my address and my phone number. The next page says online payment.
Uh-huh.
And here's what it says. It says, for redelivery, we need to charge some service fees. Your package will be redelivered after the payment. You know what they're asking me for?
How much?
3 cents.
What?
But that's not why they're doing
it. That's how they get your credit card number.
Right, because look at the form. It wants me to put the card holder, the number, the expiration date, the security code. Well, I didn't do that because I thought to myself, well, then I start doing the rewind in my brain. And I look at the text message, and the text message is from someone named Marion Kolos _ 4482 at zongkitchen.com.
Right.
What the hell is that, right?
A scam.
But the hyperlink looked exactly like the United States Postal Service.
I have got these too, and they do look totally real, but there's no way.
No.
The Postal Service can barely get us the package.
Well, that's exactly
right. Let alone send us out texts.
But you understand why I thought it was real.
Yes.
Because we've had
it.
If we go back to March, I tried to send a package to my wife in Minneapolis. She was there on business. It took 4 weeks for the package to get there. It was supposed to be there in 5 days.
It's a stroke of genius too, because we all think, ooh, I want a package. What's the package? It's just an address.
But you know what's interesting? Here, I was thinking about this after it happened, and I swear to God, if they would have told me that the number was $3, not 3 cents, mm-hmm, I think I probably would have done it.
Oh, interesting.
Because in my mind, 3 cents, that was weird to me, right?
Uh-huh.
And I thought, it's a package. Maybe, but that's when I got suspicious. So I do think it was a scam.
Oh, it was. But,
I'm hoping just by pressing in filling out my information, the hyperlink didn't do any damage. But oh my God, that was a little bit of a close call.
Have you had those, Fred?
Yes.
Yep.
I did. Like, and maybe 5 years ago, I think I went along the same route you did, but I pulled out, I think, just in time.
At the 3 cents. Did you, Ethan? Have you gotten these?
I've gotten texts like that from the USPS. From like, why am I getting these?
Yeah, but and
I've
never my done address.
So I monitor credit very carefully. And I even have an alert on my Southwest card. $20 or more, I get an alert.
Okay.
So what's spent. So if anything, maybe I should just do it for anything. But I would know if there's, you know, suspicious activity on one of my other cards as well. But that kind of put the fear of God in me just because I thought, man, that was so close to me making a big mistake.
Yeah.
You need to lower it to 3 cents. That way, you know, you'll be alerted if the 3 cents
maybe. Yeah, exactly, Fred. I know. That's a weird story. I had one other thing that I was going to do. I don't have time, so I'll save it for tomorrow when we have fun with Jane in the afternoon. Let's do this because we can't forget to do Sue's News. Oh, that's not the right one. Let's do the other one. There's two of them, in fairness. This is the right one.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, Mark, I thought of you this morning. Kim St. Ange was doing a story about copper wire thefts and how people are stealing them, and that's the cause of internet outages throughout the area.
Right.
And apparently, that is why.
So, this, Sue brings this up because, I was doing the math, it was probably 7 times from the beginning of June. One time it was 4 out of 5 weeks, okay? I'm not exaggerating this, that my charter went out. And it went out again last week. And when I wrote an angry email... No, it was very polite. And I said, hey, you guys are great. But they said this is because some of this is because of, you know, somebody slipping in and vandalizing and cutting the fiber cable.
Yeah. And that's why. So I did not realize that, of course, it's copper. And that's what they're after. And they've apparently made some arrests. So, you know, they're making progress on doing that. But I wouldn't even know. Like, again,
makes more sense, though. Because we thought to ourselves, why is someone just going in there to cut fiber cable like five?
Just to annoy Mark.
Yeah, no.
Yes, it didn't
I did
make
think
sense.
It was that, though.
You know?
It's their competitor. That's what's
that's,
really
that's yeah. probably it.
But this does make a lot more sense.
On this day in history, 42 years ago, I just found this. Okay. In 1982, a guy from Detroit named Scott Weiland ran the Detroit Marathon backwards. So you can see footage of him on YouTube. Everybody's running forward, and there's just this one guy running backwards in the crowd. That would scare me. But he did it, and he did this marathon in 4 hours, 7 minutes, and 54 seconds. That's a really good time.
It is.
He was 27 at the time, and his whole goal was to get into the Guinness Book of World Records, so that's why he did it. But if you ever want to see it on YouTube,
then
it's kind of funny.
Then he created a rock band. He was in Stone Temple Pilots. That guy was awesome. Then he passed away, I think, right?
Yep. And then,
that's interesting, though, to do the whole damn thing. He must have had
skill level.
Powerful calves, right?
Yes.
I would be so afraid of falling and hitting my head going backwards.
Fred, I'm afraid of doing that running forward.
Oh.
So I totally get it, running backwards thing.
That's pretty funny to me. The whole time I'm thinking, what does this accomplish? And I don't know. I think the Guinness Book of World Records has to be one of the silliest things ever created.
Well, you know what, because, Ethan? I get that. But 42 years ago in 1982, there was no internet. So they would just be in big books, and people would look through them and go, oh, you're
in this
book.
It was a bigger deal.
It was like a bigger deal.
I also I don't think any of us at that point had the recognition that every damn thing that you do, including like brushing your teeth, would be a world record.
Right.
At that point, it seemed like wow, this is pretty cool.
Like,
it's a world record.
At least I've thrown a watermelon the farthest.
You can make up your own thing.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of entertainment. No, we did not, Ethan. That's what
we
happened.
We didn't have the internet.
No, we had nothing. At 29 years ago, I can't believe it was 29 years, but that was in 1995 when the jury in the O.J. Simpson murder trial found him innocent of the slayings of his former wife,
Nicole
Brown.
This is the date
again? Yep.
I feel like you just did that the other day. That's how quickly the year has gone by.
And Ronald Goldman. I know, it just flies. Okay, this story is nuts. Americans are panic buying toilet paper again because of the port strike. Now, experts say, okay, we get it, but there's no reason to. Over 90% of our toilet paper, or on this show, our turlet paper, comes from the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. It's not brought on boats. So everybody can calm down.
That won't stop people. You'll go to see the shelves at Target. I remember this so well from the pandemic. I'm like, wait a second, what happened to the napkins?
So I stocked up yesterday for no reason.
Oh, my gosh.
God.
Did you really, though?
Did you?
No.
Okay.
Because I was like, dang, wait,
fair amount of people probably did.
Deal. Yeah. Well, it's not brought on boats, so don't worry about it. Plus, suppliers have known the port strike was coming for months, so apparently they stocked up for it. And I hope that's true, because if people panic by it, and then it drives me nuts. Okay, has anybody had this happen before? It happened yesterday to Bank of America people. Bank of America had an outage. That's what they're calling it. And many customers weren't able to sign into their accounts. And some, when they were able to get in, that just showed a balance of zero. Can
you imagine? Oh, man, that's panic time, isn't it?
I would have... What?
Heart attack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Bank of America issued a statement that's just very helpful. Some clients are experiencing an issue accessing their accounts and balance information today. These issues are being addressed and have largely been resolved. We apologize for any inconvenience. I guess what else can they do? But are you kidding me? That happened to me once. I didn't see a zero balance, but something didn't get deposited and they were, oh, we're having internet, you know, and I'm like, have you been hacked? Right. You wonder if that was the case. All right, Mark, here it is. Pink Floyd sold its music catalog and name and likeness rights to Sony Music for $400 million.
That's pretty much a standard. I mean, these land between three and five. You know, like yeah. Springsteen, I think, went for around $400. And Billy Joel just sold his for around that amount, I think, as well.
Well, Roger Waters and David Gilmour are finally free of each other. Apparently, they haven't yeah. gotten along for years.
Oh, no.
And Gilmour has wanted out because he got tired of dealing with Roger, who probably felt the same way. But
yeah, but Roger's the problem, I promise.
The sale does not include publishing rights, and I think that's why it's not higher.
Well, Mark, that's not that much more than what the Kelsey's got from Amazon.
Well,
right?
Okay, whatever, $100 million.
Wait, bring that up.
What you just said there doesn't make any sense to me, though.
The sale does not include publishing rights, which still belong to the individual songwriters.
Hmm.
Name and likeness includes merchandise, theatrical, album work, similar rights. But individual songwriters still have
this. Fred, this will be a good topic for our friend Tim Summer when we have him on next, because that's a little nuance that I think I understand based on what you said. But that does seem like a lot of money if you can't, you know. So in other words, if advertisers, whoever uses these because they have the right to use them now, the money would still go to Gilmour and Waters for the publishing money.
It sounds like
it. Okay.
It sounds like it. Help is finally on the way for those two astronauts who have been stranded on the International Space Station. These poor people. Over the weekend, it was SpaceX that launched a space flight to the ISS for its normal six-month crew rotation. But the launch had just two astronauts so that they could leave two seats for Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, who have been stuck up there since June due to technical issues on their Boeing Starliner capsule. But they still have to sit there till February. I just can't imagine that either of those will be going back again. It's just so annoying.
And how long of a trip was that supposed to be?
Oh, like a couple weeks. A couple days, a couple weeks.
Short.
They've been up there for months.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine?
Oh, goodness.
And I watched a video that says, here's how we sleep in space. And you have to get in a sleeping bag and strap yourself in and your hair's floating and the whole thing. I would hate it.
I mean, it's supposed to be a couple-week trip. How much food do they
right?
have on those things? That's what I'm wondering.
I know. I guess it's the International Space Station, so they have plenty, but... Oh.
You can make a case, though, for them following the news, looking down on our planet, saying, man, I want to stay away as long as possible.
Yes, you can. That's totally fair. And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. I have several that I like here, but we'll go with this. Okay. The first fast food burger chain in the U.S. was... Fred, I think you know this. I think you know it.
McDonald's?
No. What do you say, Ethan?
I'm saying Wendy's.
Nope. Mark Reardon.
Burger King?
White Castle.
Oh, White Castle. Oh, that's shameful man. That we didn't know
it
that.
It is. It was established in 1921, and it was the first chain to have every store make its food in one standard way so it would look and taste the same everywhere. And that's it for Sue's news.
It's a good one. That's a good one. And we should be ashamed here in St. Louis to not know the answer to that one. Here's Pink Floyd, worth a lot more money than they were yesterday, I suppose. 423, Selena Zito is coming up. You know, I started the show on Monday with a warning, a dire warning about North Carolina, because I'm not anything special, but I sensed that this was going to be a major story, and it is a major story, and it's still being undercovered. I mean, what these people are going through in Appalachia right now, we don't even have a sense of how bad it is, unfortunately. Selena Zito has written about this part of the country many times, and she wrote about it in the aftermath of the hurricane. She's back with us. You can find all of her work at selenazito.com. I mean, it's really, really bad, Selena. And here again, we have a situation where, you know, people are not really paying attention in the legacy media. Although, I just popped in Selena on the phone line, and I think she got cut off because I was about to go to her. And hopefully someone's paying attention to me, because I'm disadvantaged here in this studio and I can't see things out there in the other room. So, Ethan, if you are listening, This presents challenges to the host when Sue's not in here. So we don't have Selena. We'll get her on here in just a second. Let me tell you what's coming up in just a little bit. Former Senator Lamping is set up as well. And then I found a piece, and I don't know Beth, but Beth Brelia is her name. And she wrote for The Federalist about what's going on with the hurricane situation in Appalachia from a little bit of a different perspective, which is, I think, looking at it from more of a media perspective and angle with the debate moderators and how they completely ignored this. Selena Zito had this brilliant walk-up and introduction, and then all of a sudden I looked down and you were on the phone line. So you'll just have to assume it was so good. But look, I've been talking about North Carolina and this devastation for 3 days. I went so far as to say, not that it would have any impact. I thought J.D. Vance should have postponed the debate and said, look, people need help in North Carolina right now. And you've seen some of this, and you're reporting on some of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wrote a piece the other when this first broke out or first happened, and you know, 1 hour goes by, 3 hours, a day, 2 days, 4 days. There's no media reportage on it. It was only because of the pressure of the coming out of social media of people telling and saying, we can't get a hold of our family. And then they go down there and they see the devastation because a lot of people couldn't even post what was happening because there's no service. And you know, this is Appalachia. This is a part of the country, despite it being over 423 counties in our country, 27 million people. This is not a place of that is the center of power and wealth. And it doesn't even have anything to do with being red or blue, because Asheville, North Carolina, is like as hippie and left as you can get, right? It's about
Yeah, they film
place.
Movies there, right? A lot of movies have been right. made there.
It's about place. And this place, because there's no big corporate headquarters there. I mean, there are some, but there's, you know, in that thousands of miles stretch, because there's no, you know, it's not New York, it's not D.C. This has always been scant coverage. Think about the floods in Kentucky last year, or the floods in Iowa 2 years ago. That's the, you know, the South and the Midwest. They, you know, you compare that to the coverage that happened with Sandy, which happened in the East Coast, it happened in New York, and it affected, you know, them, then they cover it. But when it's foreign to them, they don't. And they don't understand the complexities of the haulers and the mountains and, you know, the poorest people. The poorest people in Appalachia always live right beside the creek.
See, these are things that regular reporters, the elite legacy media reporters, have no idea. And they're not making this attempt. By the way, here's someone from social media really crying for help.
I'm safe in my house. Our power came on. I have water and I'm so blessed. But the reports that are coming out of these towns in Western North Carolina are horrific. The news is not even coming close to catching the true devastation.
Now, Selena, I want to be careful with numbers. That same woman said something about 900 people who were at a hospital that had not been identified. That seems like a really, really big number, and I don't know that it's accurate, so we do have to be careful with some of the official stuff. But this is not getting better. You have helicopter pilots that are saying, wait a second, why are we flying into this devastation? Where's the federal government?
Well, here's the thing. These are people that are used to helping each other out because the federal government never does come.
No, that's a good point.
Okay, let's just think about this for a second. There are only two presidents in modern history that have done campaigning, like have campaigned for president on their lives and them being seen. And that is JFK in 1960 and Donald Trump in all 3 years that
wow,
he has run.
Wow, that's interesting. That is really interesting, I would say.
Pittsburgh is, it is the largest city in Appalachia, but you know, even coming to Pittsburgh is more about talking about steel, which we don't make anymore. So, you know, I always find it a little bit laughable when they do that. So even then, when they do come to Pittsburgh, they don't even, you know, in particular the Democrats, they don't even know what Pittsburgh is anymore. And so there's just this wild disconnect, and services here have always been lacking. They've always this, and when there is a problem, they throw money at it. They send people down to us, and they run these, you know, these little government fiefdoms, and the money just basically is circular and stays within the government and doesn't really do anything meaningful in the areas that need it.
So the most important thing are people that are hungry, that don't have water, that are injured, that are hurt, and maybe even dead. But we talked about this a little bit earlier. Look, there's going to be potential consequences here if people can't get out and vote in this part of the country, isn't there?
That's possible. However, I suspect, I don't know. This is just my suspicion. Look for Elon Musk. Setting up these Starlinks, making sure that people have access to be able to either do a mail-in ballot or be able to vote. I think you know, this is a guy who's really, really hyper focused on technology and how it can be helpful in today's world and in places like Appalachia. And so I'm not overtly concerned. I think that that they will get their ballots and they will vote.
How did you think that J.D. did the other night at the debate? I thought he did quite well.
He crushed it.
Yeah.
He absolutely crushed it. You know, I have been covering J.D. Vance since just when his book came out, which, by the way, was not popular when it first came out. It was only when people, the elites, were looking for a way to understand Donald Trump in 2016, like 6 months later, that they paid attention to the book. And then that's when he sort of rocketed, you know, in the forefront in our culture and eventually in our politics. But J.D. to me has always been a happy warrior. He has always been someone that can articulate complex ideas and policies, not just because of his intellect, but also because of where he came from and what he knows does and does not work.
What did you think about the knucklehead?
You know, I thought that was insulting.
Yeah, it was.
That was insulting. It's like saying, he's like saying, I'm just like the rest of you and you're dumb. It's just a sideways saying that you're deplorable.
Were you able to, and I'm not a fan because they usually suck, but the cold open on Saturday Night Live, in particular with Jim Gaffigan playing Tim Walz, did you see that by any chance?
It was good. I mean, I didn't see it live.
Oh,
but
my God. You saw
it. Funny.
But it was really, really good. All right. Well, listen, this is going to be the home stretch here. How are you feeling about Pennsylvania right now? Because it still seems like it's all going to come down to your state.
Definitely. I have a story out today, and I said, it looks like to me that this race is going to come down to the cosmetologists, the welders, the working class people in a small town in Pennsylvania who will decide this election. And if the election were held today, Trump would have the advantage.
Yeah.
Now, a million different things can happen. So, you know, that's also true. But if it were held today, you know, he has the advantage.
Keep us posted. SelenaZito.com is where you can find the work. Thank you, Selena. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Again, coming up in the next hour after the news, my friend John Ziegler, who is the host of the podcast, The Death of Journalism. But he has also extensively done research, and he did a podcast on the Penn State situation with Jerry Sandusky. And that actually came up, that particular case came up in relation to a case that the ACLU is bringing against Missouri and the Attorney General Andrew Bailey. We'll explain that here after the top of the hour. Also, Beth Brelja, who is with The Federalist. Her piece that she wrote this week was about Appalachia and some of the things that happened at the debate, so we'll hook up with her, plus an audio cut of the day. Right now, he is a staple on the Reardon Roundtable, former State Senator John Lamping with us this afternoon. John, how are you?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing pretty well. What a great show. I love Elaine Zito, and you got Zig the next hour. It's a phenomenal show.
Well, thank you very much, and I wanted your take. We haven't spoken in the aftermath of the debate the other night. I thought, and one of the things I did quote you yesterday, because you said something I think that is true. No matter what happens, and we're certainly hoping things go in the right direction here in a few weeks, I think we've learned here in the past few months, in particular coming off of Tuesday night, that the future for the Republican Party seems relatively strong, John.
Oh, yeah. I mean, going into the VP pick, the number one priority for me was that the VP be of the next generation. And at 40 years old, J.D. Vance is all that. And he just happens to be amongst a group of young Republicans who are media savvy. They're articulate. They can explain what Trump's mega movement means in ways that Trump can't, in ways that more highly educated Republican listeners want to hear. And to the extent that in the debate, it was once again 3-on-1, he crushed the three.
No doubt.
He just did a phenomenal job with the moderators. And I mean, what can you say about Walz? I mean, he's a very unserious person. He's certainly not up to this very serious job. And you know, if anybody could make Kamala Harris look more dignified, it was probably Walz in this debate.
Yeah, no kidding. And by the way, you know, I even heard it was somewhat refreshing to hear some of the folks on CNN and elsewhere criticize, and even in the New York Times and in some of the print publications, criticize Tim Walz and his performance, and, you know, at least admit that J.D. Vance was relatively successful the other night. On the other hand, oh my God, this Tim Walz guy, you know, now we know why he hasn't been sitting down on the Sunday shows for the past 6 weeks, right?
That's for sure. And, you know, most people like to say, well, the VP debate doesn't mean anything. The VPs don't mean anything. And I think just all the rules are thrown out the window in this go round. With the Democratic Party, with Kamala and Walz not willing to sit down and take interviews and speak to the press in any way, shape or form, when they do have an opportunity to present themselves to the country and they fall so flatly on their faces like this, I think it was a very meaningful night. And as far as like longer term optimism, oh my gosh, with Vance, with Vivek, I like Tulsi Gabbard in our party. There's so many young Tom Cotton, so many young, well spoken, knowledgeable people who half of whom all the names I just mentioned are all veterans too. And the fact that the party has turned now, the Republican Party is the working class party. It's clearly is working class party. The unions are not participating. The firefighters union came out today. They're not endorsing. They had endorsed Biden last time around. It's a very wonderful moment. And all we need in this next 30 days now is we need victory to seal it.
Yeah. And let's kind of talk about what you feel, where you feel the landscape is. I think Celino, I always like speaking with her because her boots are on the ground. She actually talks to people and she has a good sense. And certainly she did in 2016. And she wrote a book about it called The Great Revolt. Now, I always give you credit, John, because you knew that I was a naysayer in 2016. I just my position on Trump was, I think, multi-tiered, if you will. But one of the things that a lot of us said at the time is there's no electoral path for Trump. And that certainly got blown up because of Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. I don't know how Wisconsin and Michigan are going to go, but it really could come down to just Pennsylvania. And, you know, here again, I got to kind of talk politics with Helene because this is going to have an impact potentially from several different angles. One, I think it's going to illustrate the ineptitude of the federal government in this administration even further than they've been, you know, laid out at this point. But it also presents some challenges for voting in the next few weeks, which has me a little concerned about North Carolina.
Well, we need to be concerned about what votes get counted, who gets to vote. I think that without that cloud of uncertainty surrounding the level of election integrity, I'm optimistic as and anyhow today. I think we're setting ourselves up for just a phenomenal day in a landslide. Back in 2016, Mark, what I experienced is I saw working class people, guys at the grocery store that were talking about Trump that don't talk politics ever. And I knew that was happening on the ground level. Now it's all across the country. It's well understood. You know, the borders has collapsed. We're involved in two wars right now. The ineptitude will be so obvious what's going on down in North Carolina. But then listen to the punditry, the polls, the tabs in polls. You hear in Michigan, under 30 voters Trump's tied with Kamala with under 30 voters. Trump is up 10, 15 points with Latin American voters, with African American voters. I mean, all of these things, all what makes up the electorate for the Democrats, Trump's 10, 15 points ahead, and yet somehow the national polls showed it a dead heat. Now, you and I, we're all programmed to think, oh, it's going to be very, very close. I think if they count the actual ballots that are cast, I have a feeling it could be just a huge night for Trump, a huge night for Republicans. You could wake up the next day, hopefully, probably next week, and see a 2 or 3 seat majority in the Senate, have the House, and then have, and the thing about having Trump in the White House this time is he knows what to do this time. He knows not what to do. He's surrounded himself with much better people. And, you know, he's only going to be there for 4 years. And this next generation of bright, articulate, well-spoken people will be right there behind him. I heard Vivek's thing about running for the governor of Ohio in 2026. There's so many positive things that could happen if Trump wins, and I'm optimistic that 4 weeks from Tuesday he will.
If anyone is looking for a striking juxtaposition on opinions, if you listen in the next hour to my friend John Ziegler, you're not going to get as much optimism. But, you know, John, I kind of go back and forth on this. I did not feel very good and optimistic at the end of August, certainly even the beginning of September, but I am seeing some things that are encouraging right now. And even just talking to Selena, I think, made me feel better. But you got to have people turn out. And, you know, we're only at the first week of October, so we'll see what happens. I'm sure that there will be more surprises down the line. Hey, by the way, I apologize. I did not get to see you at Evolution Festival the other night. Did you have a good time? What did you think of the Killers? They were great, weren't they?
The Killers were great. I thought the festival itself was phenomenal. It was quite the concert week for Karen and I. We were there Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, Stain was in town. But I thought, I really hope it comes back. I love who was there to see, you know, Chic, Todd Rundgren, like the lesser name, Sunvolt. Beck was great, and it just was a really well-run thing, and I was grateful for the fact that it didn't rain and was kind of cool, and you know, I hope they make it back next year.
I do, too, because, you know, I think ticket sales ended up being a little soft. They had these VIP tents that were set up behind the regular VIP, and I'm told that a lot of those were comped, and this is tough because there's a lot of competition out there. We know the economy's a little soft, but it is a great festival, and I think that Steve and Steve Shankman and the gang really put everything into it. The only downside for me was the mud, but if you prepared and you wore, you know, old shoes or something like that, you got through that, and it seemed like it was another great festival. So we'll see. I hope it's, you know, something that can point toward year three, but I don't think that's guaranteed just because of the business model.
No, you're right. I was Mike Mushok, the lead guitarist and songwriter from Stain. I was with him Tuesday night, and he said, you know, the challenge that all these festivals have is that they end up overpaying the bands. It's a great gig for the bands, but the amount of money they make on these festivals, I don't know why that is. I think some bands are reluctant to kind of share a stage or be third down the ticket or something. But I had a great time. We stayed at the Chase. We booked our bar tickets in February. I look forward to seeing who they announce next spring, and hopefully it's every bit as good as this last weekend.
I hope so, too. All right, Lamping, thank you very much. We'll catch you on the roundtable soon.
Good seeing you. Take
all right.
care.
I don't think he's on tomorrow. I've got to check my list. I should know that. No, it is State Rep Steve Butts and Gene Evans will be here tomorrow. But John obviously is a veteran of the Reardon Roundtable. It's interesting, the optimism. And I'm not the best person to talk to, and I think everybody knows that when it comes to optimism, because I really did. I felt very definitively at the end of August that things were not trending very well. And some of that's just buying into the narrative and where the media is and the polling. But John's not coming on in the next hour really to talk only about the race. There's an interesting connection that he has with some of the work that he's done on the Jerry Sandusky case to Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, and a story that kind of got in the news this week about a case that Andrew is defending right now because it's a lawsuit brought by the ACLU. And then Ziegler's name gets mentioned in all of that, which we found somewhat interesting. And John was the person who shared that with me yesterday when the story came out from the Missouri Independent. We also have Beth Breglia, who is an election correspondent for The Federalist. I don't know Beth. I'm looking forward to having her on. I read a piece that she wrote about the moderators the other night, and I criticized this pretty much yesterday. The second question that they ask is about climate change. Now, it's not about the devastation that the hurricane brought. It's not about the federal response. It's not about people needing help in Appalachia. None of that. It's about you evil Republicans are in denial about climate change, and you're the ones to blame here for all these people that are dying, and you need to know that. And that was basically the tone of Nora O'Donnell as she sort of became opinionated at the end of that particular exchange. But Beth will weigh in on that. And then, of course, we have an audio cut of the day. Also tomorrow, we should make mention, it's a regular Friday. We'll have Paul Hall here on entertainment, some stuff going into the weekend for you to check out. Cusimano with a preview of the Mizzou game. And then this. Sue, I'm very excited. There was an announcement a couple of weeks ago that Bernie Miklas was coming on the radio to work at KMOX, and he's doing a couple of shows over there on a regular basis. And we are going to borrow Bernie for this show tomorrow in the 5 o'clock hour and talk about the Cardinals reset, and he'll have some opinions on the Blues, etc. I love Bernie. I'm a big fan. I still miss him from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's never been the same without him, and he writes or had been writing, you know, columns with Scoops with Danny Mac, and I don't see those anymore. So I don't know if I'm missing them, if they're going into my junk, but we'll find out from Bernie tomorrow night. He's a St. Louis legend, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number three is coming up. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.